And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Welcome to the Move the Sticks podcast. I'm Bucky Brooks, and I'm joined with my man LZ, Lance Erline, who does anything and everything in the media world. He is
extraordinary
radio host. He does
let me know. TV.
He's Houston's finest. Everything, whatever you want, LZ can deliver. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, good. I got some barbecue people. You need a patio. I got a guy that can build a patio. I got a new plumbing guy started speaking for. So, you know, you got to have a list. Don't act like you don't have a list in California. Don't act like you don't have a list of people.
I do have a list, but I got to get to this before you. Last time you were on the pod, I think it was right before the Astros, or I think they call them the Trashstros.
Trashstros. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Trashstros came out to L.A. I actually went to the first game, took the kids and stuff to see. And let me tell you, I've never seen anything like it in terms of just the level of disruption that the Astros cause when they get onto the field. But here's the thing. I think they've kind of stepped into the villainous role and they are okay with it. I think after the first year of kind of complaining, like, hey, it's not fair. I think Dusty Baker and company, they just are like, hey, man, we are what we are. And they go get it. Little Altuve is out there being the Villa, Correa and those guys. But let me tell you, man, it was very interesting. And the Astros are legit, though. They are good, dude.
Yeah, they can play. And I think one of the things that really surprises some people is that the Astros are so good at just, as you mentioned, basically being comfortable with who they are, basically. Yeah. They're like, okay, well, you want us to be the villain? Well, now we're going to be the villain. And so I think that's, you know what? And I think that's what's important in sports. Sometimes you have to, it's not necessarily who someone else defines you as, but there comes a time where you can't let things like that define you. And so, you know, I say that as we lead into, you know, the meat of the football stuff we're going to talk about. I think it's important really for players and teams in any sport. At some point, you can't worry about what they're going to say about you. You just have to be you. Because I remember there is a quarterback way back in the day, Cordell Stewart, who I think Cordell was too worried about what people thought of him, you know, being a running quarterback and not being a pocket passer. And I felt like he tried to fit into the mold of what he thought maybe other people wanted him to be, maybe even who the Chicago Bears wanted him to be. And there are times where you have to just say, I am this, and you lean into it. And for the Astros, you know, it bothered them last year. I can tell you that. They played like it bothered them last year. This year, they're like, whatever. We're just going to go at it. And if you want us to be the bad guys, we'll be the bad guys. That's fine. But you got to be you at some point and stop worrying about letting other people define you.
It's funny that you bring that up because it's going to lead to a natural transition. But I'm going to say this, and I had a coach tell me this a long time ago. When you play to your strengths, you have no weaknesses. So once you identify what you're good at and the style of play that works for you, no matter what people say, you just continue to lean into it. Because if you always can find a way to get the game where you're playing to your strong suit, you're going to have far more success than not in doing it. And so when I think about this in terms of identity, Hard Knocks just premiered with the Dallas Cowboys. And there's been a lot of conversation about how the Cowboys were portrayed with the cameras being there. Mike McCarthy, is this his real personality? Is it fake? DQ with all the cursing and all the other stuff. And then the players and the personalities that appeared. What was your takeaway on the Cowboys, like the premiere episode of Hard Knocks? Did you have a take on it?
Yeah, you know, it's a show that I've loved for years and years. I'm a big fan of documentaries. I think HBO does an exceptional job. I got to be here watching. I actually had the executive producer or producer of Hard Knocks reach out to me before they came to Houston, you know, several years ago, but 2014 when Bill O'Brien took over as head coach. And I think someone told them that they should reach out to me, that I had some good, you know, help in terms of storylines. And so I gave them some players I thought they would be interested in that would make for good documentary material and some storylines to look out for that insiders might know about. And so watching the whole thing take place and how they cut it up and how they edit it and everything, I thought it was really fascinating. I liked what I saw yesterday. I've been a big fan of Hard Knocks, but I felt like we got a good look at Dak the person and what he's going through. I think we got to look at Zeke a little bit in terms of I don't know that they gave us any great insight into it necessarily. But, you know, you've been in those rooms, Bucky, so you've seen it. You know what looks authentic. You know what looks inauthentic. I think guys know when they're mic'd up nowadays on Hard Knocks. I can say that. I do think a lot of players know when they're mic'd up and they play to that. But I think we're going to be off to a pretty good Hard Knocks. I think this is going to be good with the Dallas Cowboys. I tell you what really struck me is Jerry Jones starting to get choked up at that press conference, because you sense that he's a guy who knows, I don't have a lot of time left here realistically with the Cowboys and trying to win another title. And he came right into the league and won a bunch of titles, and it seems easy. And now here we are 26 years later, and he just has never gotten even a taste of something like that again. So I'm not saying he's I think his urgency, his level of urgency really kind of popped off the TV screen yesterday, as he knows he's got to have Dak back. He knows he's got to have him healthy. And I think he sees that opportunity potentially slipping away if they don't capture it right now with the talent they have on the roster.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you brought that part up, because when I look at the Cowboys and Jerry Jones, and having been up to camp a few different times, really impressed with what I've seen from the team. And I know people say, like, it's only practice. What can you really get out of practice? I will say this. The tenor and the tone of the team appears to be a lot different than it was last year. And not having been privy to seeing how they operated under Mike Lolan and the defensive staff, I will tell you, in watching Dan Quinn, the guys, the emphasis on effort, the attention to detail when it comes to the fundamentals, and just kind of getting everybody on the same page, I think you can sense that. And it's hard to, you know, make strong proclamations based off of preseason work and those things. In the Hall of Fame game, like, they end up losing 16-3. But I would tell you, they appear to be a much better product. The one thing that came out of that, or that's come out in recent days, Dak Prescott going to have another MRI. And I know people saying, like, oh, it's not a big deal. But I know this, Lance, I just don't walk around on the planet Earth and decide, you know what, I think I'm going to get an MRI today unless there's something that's going on. So I think that is a situation to just kind of monitor, because I would get worried him getting a second MRI on a shoulder issue, and the fact that they consulted the Rangers and some other people, to me, that appears to be a very serious deal that they're trying to avoid.
You know, it's funny. And when you say that, it's got me thinking back to Jerry Jones's response, to Mike McCarthy's response. They're both, you know, you didn't get the feeling that they were, that this whole thing was an abundance of caution, as the, you know, their medical staff, you know what, we're doing this out of an abundance of caution. And I just kind of bought into it and just kept it moving. But you do get the sense, when I think back about how the owner and how the head coach reacted, they're very concerned, as well as they should be. I mean, they're a completely different team without Dak Prescott. I think what it gets to is that we always have to remember is there's been a sense of, I think a lot of fans see that Adrian Peterson's come back from a knee injury and go for 2,000. That guy's a cyborg. He's a robot. That's not real life. What Adrian Peterson does has nothing to do with you or me or any other living humans. He's a different cat, and that's that. You do have to worry about, they talked about trusting, getting the mind to trust the body. And I think Joe Burrow's going through that some right now in Cincinnati, which is something else we can hit on at some point. But I think coming back from injury is not 100% guaranteed. Coming back at the person you were before, it's not always, especially with lower leg issues or with the shoulder mechanism for a passer or for a pitcher, whatever the case may be. You can't just put it in the books as a lock that, okay, after 8 months, 12 months, everything's good. Not always. Not always.
No, and I think that is a great point that you bring up, about how they played it off in terms of out of an abundance of caution, but then it appeared to be a little more serious in nature. And maybe the distress that was kind of conveyed or expressed by owner Jerry Jones and then head coach Mike McCarthy. And I think a lot of it goes back to the backup quarterback situation. If you've been out here, you've been up to Oxnard and had a chance to see Cooper Rush and Gary Gilbert throw it around, there's not a lot of confidence in what happens. And for a team that fell apart when Dak Prescott went exited stage left a year ago, I think it has to be some concern. And I think that is why you're hearing the reports of them trying to really take a super cautious approach to make sure they understand exactly what's going on and how to best treat it. Speaking of,
yeah,
like we're talking about quarterbacks and not being available in the preseason. I got to hit you because you're in H-Town.
Yeah. Dude,
what in the world? What? Like it's our weekly thing. What's going on with Deshaun Watson and the Texans? What are we doing?
I brought up the Bucky Brooks comment on my show the very next day. Well, Bucky said, too bad. You're a Texan. Why don't the Texans just play him? Why don't they just play him? And my radio partner said, you tell Bucky. Like, he's losing his mind. You know, to refresh people who didn't hear it, you talked about the fact that, you know, Deshaun is under contract. Deshaun Watson, if he wants to get paid, will play for the Texans. If he doesn't want to, he won't play. But it's really – things are starting to get a little tricky with the Texans. So here's the latest for people who haven't heard. Yesterday, the Texans tried to shut down practice. Like, okay, we're done with camp. We're going into regular season mode. They haven't even played their first preseason game. By league rules, you can't do that until August 26th. You can't go to regular season rules, which basically would shut the media out after the first 20 minutes. And – the thought from some of the Houston media members, some of the veterans who have been around like John McClain, et cetera, was that this was a chance to potentially prevent people from being out there to continually monitor Deshaun Watson, talk about Deshaun Watson, ask questions about if you're not there and you don't know what's going on, the questions are going to slow down. Well, obviously, the media got that shut down where, no, you can't just shut us out and say you're going to regular season mode. And then this morning, as we tape this, Deshaun was walking off the practice field at one point, and he basically told the person who's filming him with a little iPhone or whatever, why do y'all keep filming me? It's the same bleep, you know. I don't even know what you're doing. Why are you filming this? That's as salty as I've ever seen Deshaun Watson. Deshaun is pretty much always the smile on the face guy, easy to get along, you know, get along to go along. It's not a problem. But I think what we have now is this is a player who's checked out on playing in the city of Houston. He's checked out on playing for the Houston Texans. In his mind, he's never going to again. And I think he's going to have to guard against his frustrations a little bit. And the Texans are just going to have to deal with it. He's at camp. They're going to have to deal with questions. They're not going to be able to New England their way out of it. You know, that Nick Caserio move, that felt like a Bill Belichick New England move, right? To say, okay, that's it. We're shutting down practice. Whoa, you don't have a bunch of Super Bowls here with the Houston Texans. You can't just make these wide sweeping rules like that.
I think this situation continues to be an indictment on the lack of leadership in Houston in the front office and those things.
Agreed. Because
for as long as this has played out, because it's not like this happened overnight. Like, this is a situation that happened at the early part of the offseason where you knew Deshaun Watson was going to dig his heels in and having an issue. Now, the tables flipped when the lawsuits came in the spring, and that changed it, where it kind of went from, oh, people assumed that Deshaun Watson had the leverage, to now the Texans are trying to figure out how they're going to handle it. And now what you have is, I would say, a full-scale mess on both hands, because for the Houston Texans to not have a plan for how they were going to handle Deshaun Watson when he came to training camp, that is on them. For Deshaun Watson, this is a situation where, in essence, I hate this saying, but I'm going to use it. He wants his cake and he wants to eat it too, meaning he wants to show up and avoid the fines, but he doesn't want to do the work. And he still wants to get paid when the regular season comes, his salary, but he doesn't want to play for the Texans. Hey, man, it doesn't work like that.
Right.
When you're on the contract, if the Houston Texans, if Nick Caserio really had the nerve, I would be like, you're either playing or we're going to suspend you and send you home. But I'm not paying you to kind of be around and not get anything out of you. I don't know where that works. And because the NFL hasn't stepped in with the commissioner's exemption list, they need to make a decision. And so what I do wonder is, when they eventually shut the media out, are they going to continue to do this dance with Tyrod Taylor as a starting quarterback? Or at some point, are they going to get Deshaun Watson ready to play? Because I just know if I'm McNair, I just have a tough time writing that check every Monday for a person who is, as you said, has checked out and is not giving anything to get it.
I 100% think he's checked out. And here's something else. I think once push comes to shove, if you start to push him in that direction of actually playing, we could see some injuries pop up. Take it for what it is.
Oh,
they said today already he was already getting his leg looked at. I'm like, from what? From walking?
Oh, no, I understand that, because I also understand the way this plays out, because, like, we've seen situations like that when Jalen Ramsey had the back injury and those things, like those injuries that you can't detect. Well, we're gonna have to see those things play out.
Well, Bucky, I think this
is just drives me crazy.
This is important, though, because you mentioned Jalen. This is the first high-profile quarterback where you've had a situation where he signed a contract, and before he played a game under the new contract, he's asking to get out of town. I think how the Texans deal with this, either positively or negatively, is going to be a learning experience for another team at some point for something they're going to have to deal with. And I think other teams are going to look at this and try to say, okay, if this happened to us, we would not do that. Oh, you know what? They had a good point here. Maybe we would do this if we ever had to deal with this. Because this is not going to be the last time this ever happens in the league. This is going to happen again.
No, it's not going to be the last time. And I think ownership is also looking, not only the Texans, but ownership around the league. They're looking at how the Texans handle this, because the reason they flipped the language in the CBA is because they wanted to prevent holdouts. Well, in essence, what we're doing is we're getting a bunch of hold-ins. Guys that are in camp but not practicing, but that defeats the purpose. Like if TJ Watt is refusing to participate in team drills, Jamal Adams and Dwayne Brown are refusing to participate in practice, but they're in camp. To me, players are trying to run an end run around the rules. And at some point, if you show up, you have to show up willing to participate, or you have to count that as a holdout. Like you can't have it both ways. It just is what it is. And look, I'm pro player as a former player, but at some point, man, business is business, and it works both ways. If you get the big contract, I mean, I'm not one of those, but the old man alone, like, hey, you got to honor the contract. But in Deshaun Watson's case, you signed a big deal last September. What has changed now that you're like, oh, no, I can't play for them, but you already can't. You took the direct deposit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they got the routing number and everything.
Right. So my thing, if I'm Houston, is, okay, just give us the money back. We'll,
yeah, it's a wrap. And that's not happening. Because now the Texans are paying for the legal defense fund. That can't feel good for Kyle McNair.
No, I mean, like, that's it. So it's just interesting to see how it goes. Let's move on, because, you know, it's funny. We're talking so much about the Texans and all this other stuff within their division. There are a couple teams that are shaping up to be Super Bowl contenders. Like, we can talk about the Indianapolis Colts when they went and got Carson Wentz. The Tennessee Titans have been on the cusp. But I want to use those teams to kind of start a conversation about who are the teams that you believe are the dark horse contenders, the teams that maybe we're not talking enough about but could emerge as one of those teams that could be at the last team standing.
You know, I try to reach out and find a true dark horse. I try not to get – a second tier team. I want somebody that'll make you think a little bit. And I'm looking through the AFC, and a team that I came up with, because I think there's enough change there, are the Chargers. Adding Chris Harris, getting Derwin James back healthy and playing, Corey Linsley at center, Rashawn Slater at left tackle, a legitimate left tackle, a guy that I think is going to be a pro right off the bat over there. If you can avoid the sophomore slump for Justin Herbert, you've got wide receivers. I like the dual threat running. I think the running back position could be a little deeper on the depth chart, but I know they like who they have over there. The offensive line got better for sure. And remember, this is a team who lost a lot of close games. They were their own worst enemies defensively late in games and lost a lot of close games. If you can flip some of those to go the other way for you, you're in the playoffs. And if the Chargers get into the playoffs and you catch a hot hand with a pass rusher in Bosa, you have good wide receivers who create matchup problems, and then you have a quarterback who, once again, I'm talking about if Justin Herbert can take the next step and not step in a pothole like a lot of second-year quarterbacks do, then that could be an interesting dark horse candidate. Now, when I say dark horse candidate, you know, most people would see it as unlikely, but I do see enough there from a pass rush standpoint, from a defensive, you know, from the secondary getting better, and of course, tightening up the offensive line, there's enough there for me to say, you know what? Maybe four of those losses can turn into four wins on the flip side for the Chargers this year.
Yeah, I like that conversation. I like that pick. The person that I say is under the most pressure to make that happen is Joe Lombardi, the new offensive coordinator, because We have seen what this offense looked like with Justin Herbert year one. And people can take shots at Anthony Lynn and all that other stuff, but the offense moved well with Justin Herbert. Joe Lombardi, I think people need to understand, the last time we saw him as an offensive coordinator, it wasn't a great look in Detroit. Mm-hmm. So what does he learn from that situation? What does he learn from his experiences after that to put him in a better situation to allow Justin Herbert to flourish in that offense? I want to see that. My dark horse contender in the AFC would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the reason why I would say the Pittsburgh Steelers is because I feel like people have just kind of poured dirt on the Steelers, despite the fact that their defense is legit. I know Ben Roethlisberger is old, and I know that they faded down the stretch last year. I think people have to realize they still were 12-14 a year ago. And Najee Harris is a dramatic and significant upgrade over what they had at running back last year. Also, I believe Kalen Ballage, who popped up in the first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game, gives them a little something to go. And so anytime you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you play the kind of defense that they play, they should always be in the conversation because that defense will get them to 10 or 11 wins. Ben Roethlisberger's guile and winning ways could get them to 12-13. And if you put that team in the tournament, and if Najee Harris emerges as a big-time player, put money on the Pittsburgh Steelers being one of those teams that we talked about in the Final Four.
And I think Najee has to be – that's the key. I mean, at some point, Juju Smith-Schuster has to get back on form. But I think Claypool is a different kind of player. Like, to me, Claypool is a big difference maker over there. If Deontay Johnson can find his hands and can catch a football, because we know he can make big plays, if Juju Smith-Schuster can get his swagger back a little bit, and I think a large part of that is just Ben Roethlisberger staying healthy because they've always had a pretty good rapport. But the guy you mentioned is the whole key because we've seen quarterbacks later in their career have success when less was asked of them. When good quarterbacks had a little less on their plate, like, you know, we saw with Tony Romo, guys get better when you ask a little bit less of them when they're older. And the only way you can do that is if you run the football well. If you run the football well, then the players aren't, you know, behind the six sticks, so to speak. You don't have guys pinning their ears back. A big problem for the Steelers the last couple of years is they have no juice at running back. They've got the same type of running back, you know, Benny Snell.
They did the RBC, the running back by committee that everyone in the analytics world swears by, and it didn't work out for them.
And so it didn't work out because I think James Conner and Benny Snell were too similar. They added McFarland from Maryland and didn't get him into the mix enough. What they needed is a guy like Le'Veon Bell, and they got that with Najee Harris. Well, if Najee can take some pressure off Ben, which I think he's going to, and if you can keep Ben upright, which they've done an amazing job. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger's, I think, you know, my dad had to protect for Ben Roethlisberger back in the day, 2007 through 10 or whatever it was, 2006, whatever the years were. He won a Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger. But Ben, you know, he single-handedly pulled them out of that Super Bowl against the Cardinals and made plays when that offensive line was all beat to hell. But Ben was also a guy that would hang on to the ball for all of eternity and take too much pressure and too much and take too many hits. Todd Haley came in there, and he changed Ben's mentality. And Ben didn't like it. Ben fought him. People may remember that. But Ben Roethlisberger started getting rid of the ball quicker. And I think it's been – I think it's really a lot of credit should be given to Ben Roethlisberger because it's hard for that tiger to change his stripes. And yet Ben has done a really good job of getting rid of the football, helping his offensive line out. And I think when you take that into today's football in 2021 – and you give him a running back, and now you give him Claypool and Smith-Schuster is back again, and you look at the entirety of the Steelers, if that offensive line can step up a little bit, you've got a good pick there on your hands. With or without Bud Dupree, for example, as a pass rusher, I still think T.J. Watt's good enough to get it done.
What about in the NFC? Give me a dark horse contender.
You know, I'm going to stick with the team, Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, we talked about it. You have to have Dak Prescott there. There's no getting around it. But I want to tell you something that I absolutely love. I love the fact that your offensive line looks like they're back intact. And then Zeke Elliott, anytime you see running backs who have been around for a while come into camp and they're 10 pounds lighter, that's always a good sign because they recognize there's always a point in a running back's career where they get lighter, where veterans figure out, okay, you know what? I need to play lighter. It'll make me quicker. And I think he came in better shape. He came in lighter, which I think is going to affect his quickness. But it also shows me a mentality where he put time in to get to a certain point where he had a realization last year that it wasn't going in the direction he wanted it to. So what I'm saying is I think a rejuvenated Zeke Elliott, which is what I think we're going to see based on how he looks right now headed into the season, I think that's a big, big bonus because I have no doubt CeeDee Lamb is going to take another step in the offseason. And if Dak Prescott can stay healthy and that offensive line is now together and you got a Zeke Elliott with a little bit more quickness and a step, to me, that means the Dallas Cowboys should be considered a serious contender for that dark horse category. Because when you look in the division, look, I don't think Philadelphia is going to scare you. I don't think the Giants are going to scare you. And Washington's got a great front, but I still have to see it from an offensive standpoint. So, you know, if Dallas can live up to the hype offensively, they might be able to just outgun Washington.
You know, quickly, I am going to take a team in the NFC West. I'm obviously going to say the San Francisco 49ers. I believe Trey Lance eventually gets that gig. When I think about Trey Lance, the running game, the defense, and how they go about doing it, I think this team is well positioned to make a run. And the experience that they have a couple years ago of going to the Super Bowl, I think it makes all the difference in the world. Give me the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC. I think they're the ones that can get it done.
Yeah, I think they can win a Super Bowl. I mean, the question is going to be, you just brought it up. The question is going to be, I have no doubt that this offense can work with Trey Lance. Is Trey Lance ready to work with this offense right away? I mean, I think to me, that's going to be the big question mark is, can you get enough out of Trey Lance in year one? But the safe move is Jimmy Garoppolo, but the move with the higher ceiling and the higher upside is Trey Lance. It's just a question of how quickly can he come around. It's an enviable spot to be in. You got two quarterbacks that you feel comfortable with. And, you know, Nick Bosa getting back. I really haven't read a lot on where he is right now in terms of how healthy he looks in camp. But, I mean, people forget. They didn't have Nick Bosa. You get Nick Bosa back, and can single-handedly wreck the protection and the scheme up front. So I think getting Nick Bosa back is going to be a really, really big deal for a team that frankly – you know, I don't even count what they did last year. Last year was irrelevant to me. It's the same thing. 2 years ago when they weren't very good and they drafted Nick Bosa because they had a high draft pick, they went to the Super Bowl the next year. I don't think it's crazy to think they're a Super Bowl team.
You know, it's funny, Lance, when we think about these team and dark horse contenders, we know that we'll revisit this conversation in the middle of the season because there's always a team that emerges. There's always a team that kind of finds its sea legs in the middle of the year. And it's always exciting to see those unknown teams come out of the back to be like title contenders. So I can't wait to see what it looks like this year. I think it's one of the things that we all look forward to because it's great with a 7 teams in each conference in the playoff format. I think it makes for a very, very exciting time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I do think there's the bounce back teams. You mentioned San Francisco. I'm really interested to see the bounce back storylines with Dak Prescott, with Joe Burrow. And really, I think one of the biggest bounce back scenarios is going to be, is Carson Wentz. Is he done? I mean, mentally, is he checked back in? Does he get his confidence back? Can Frank Reich be that guy to get him back? Or did the Colts just trade for not literally damaged goods, but, you know, figuratively, mentally damaged good. Is he a guy that can get back to his confidence level he had before? So I think the Colts are another one of those interesting teams as well.
Yeah, it'd be fun to play out. Your guy, Chris Ballard, just got paid, so that's exciting. So I think they should have a lot of confidence knowing that they're going to be there to continue to build a program the way that they see fit. And one of the things that I'm excited about, we're talking about building. Man, I love building upon what we continue to do when you pop in. I love our conversations. And I can't wait for you to come back and rejoin the Move the Sticks podcast where you can share some more insight and knowledge and wisdom and some of that H-Town flavor.
You just let me know.
Hey, thanks so much for joining the Move the Sticks podcast. I'm Bucky Brooks. That was LZ. Tune in next week for some more podcasts.